Hare Krishna. Congratulations to all of you for being in this most auspicious abode of Krishna and Prabhupada on the most auspicious occasion of Nrisimha Chaturdasi. The appearance day of Lord Nrisimhadev. This history goes back many millennia and is discussed in 10 chapters of the 7th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. And the prelude to this pastime is discussed also in the 3rd canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. But many millennia ago, our history goes back to the beginning of the creation. So, Lord Brahma is the first created being within the universe, and he is the chief engineer of the universe, or you could say he engineers the secondary creation. But he's the chief among the demigods within the universe, and the original. So he, as his service to Krishna, has to create the different bodies for different living entities and populate the universe. That's one of his services. So, four of his sons are the Kumaras, Chatusan. And Lord Brahma, because he had that service of populating the universe, he wanted them to marry. But they refused because they did not want to become entangled in procreation. And Lord Brahma became angry. And out of his anger came Rudra, Lord Shiva. Later, I heard that Srila Prabhupada said that one must obey the order of the spiritual master. That is one of the basic necessities for spiritual progress, to obey the order of the spiritual master. But he said there is one order of the spiritual master you can disobey, and that is the order to get married. And I related that to the precedent set by the four Kumaras. Be that as it may. So the four Kumaras, although they were among the first sons of Lord Brahma from the beginning of creation, they always looked like young boys of about 5 years. But they were full of transcendental knowledge, and incidentally they had mystic powers. So they were able to enter the spiritual sky and approached the gates of Vaikuntha. And the gates of Vaikuntha are guarded by two big, strong, powerful servants of the Lord named Jai and Vijay. We also have Jai and Vijay in this temple. And this is even higher than the regular Vaikuntha. This is like the supermost planet of Goloka Vrindavan. So the gatekeepers thought that these are just children. They are not qualified to enter Vaikuntha. And so they tried to stop them. So there was some argument, and Lord Narayan understood there was an argument, and he personally came to the scene to mitigate the conflict. And he spoke very graciously to the four Kumaras, because they were Brahmins and devotees. And he glorified Brahmins and devotees. And because Jai and Vijay had impeded their movements, they became angry and cursed them. And Lord Narayan, to establish the principle of respect to devotees, he upheld the curse, and he gave them, Jai and Vijay, the choice of that they could come into the material world for 7 lifetimes as devotees, or for 3 lifetimes as demons. So Jai and Vijay chose 3 lifetimes as demons, because they did not want to be away from their service in Vaikuntha, because they were very qualified for their service. Now there is a mystery here. There's a mystery here. How could Lord Narayan's liberated associates be cursed and fall down into the material world? The secret is that the Lord, who is the origin of everything, janmadiyasyataha, he's the origin of everything and everyone, he also has the fighting propensity, like we do. You can see it in cats, in dogs, in children, in adults, in heads of state. They have the fighting propensity. So where does that come from? It comes from Krishna. He also has it. But who can fight with Krishna? He's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's all powerful. So Jai and Vijay, being very alert and attentive to all of the Lord's wants and desires, they understood that the Lord wanted to fight with someone. And they thought, you know, we are the biggest, we are the strongest, we are the most powerful, we are actually the best suited for this service. and not wanting that the Lord should be lacking in any way, they had that desire to serve him by fighting with him, and so they took birth as demons. And so the two of them, Jaya and Vijaya, first took birth as Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu. They were very powerful, very belligerent, and anyway, so Hiranyaksha, by his nefarious activities, caused the earth to fall down into the ocean, Garbhodak Ocean. And so the Lord appeared as Varahadev to lift up the ocean. Srila Prabhupada comments that the planets are suspended in space by a very delicate balance. And if that balance is disturbed, the planet's position in orbit can be affected. And he said that modern day demons, they drill into the earth to extract oil, and they are not aware that they can disturb the delicate balance by which the planet is suspended in space. So when and then Varahadev fought with Hiranyaksha and killed him. So Hiranyakashipu became furious that Lord Vishnu had killed his brother. And so he was determined to take revenge. And he performed extremely severe austerities, standing on the tips of his toes. He didn't move for years and years, so much so that an ant hill was built up around his body. The ants were eating the flesh of his body, but still he didn't flinch in his austerities. And finally, there was so much heat in his body that it was like fire. It was burning the universe. So Lord Brahma came to him and said, no one has done austerities like you have done. You don't need to continue. And if you have any, if you want any benediction, you can ask. So he wanted to be immortal. And Lord Brahma said, although I am the first created being, but even I am not immortal. When the universe comes to an end, I also have to leave my body. But I will give you anything else. So, I don't want to repeat too much because many of you know this story, but at the same time I'm not sure if everyone does. But anyway, he granted various boons, and Hiranyakasipu thought, oh well, no one can kill me now. Because he asked, let me not be killed inside of any building or outside. and Lord Brahma's granted. Let me not be killed in the sky, on the land, or in the sea. Granted. Let me not be killed by any demigod or human being or animal. Granted. Let me not be killed during the day or night. Granted. He asked for so many boons by which he thought that he would eliminate any possibility of being killed. And so he thought he was immortal. And people, when they get in that mood, they can do anything. I heard that Hitler, during his career, a bomb was set for him and planted under the table where he was presiding over a meeting. And somehow, it was a heavy table, and somehow the leg of the table or the support of the table completely blocked the explosion. The bomb exploded, but it didn't touch him because he was protected by that partition that was supporting the table. And after that, he felt confirmed that, you know, no one can kill me. Like, I'm chosen. I'm destined to conquer. And he, after that, he became more exuberant in his activities. So Hiranyakasipu, yeah, he thought Vishnu is like an ordinary living entity, but with mystic powers. So he thought if he did these severe austerities, he could get greater mystic powers than Vishnu and defeat him and kill him and avenge his brother's death. And so he began to tyrannize the universe, especially everything dear to Vishnu, the Brahmins, Brahminical culture, the cows, sacrifices. We've been reading in this second chapter of the seventh canto. You can imagine 10 full chapters. You can only say so much. But anyway, so there was fighting between the demigods and the demons, led by Hiranyakashipu. And in battles, in wars, there's always ups and downs. One side gets the upper hand, then the other side gets the upper hand. So at one stage, the demigods got the upper hand, and they took possession of Hiranyakasipu's wife, who was pregnant. And they thought that, you know, that his wife is carrying his seed, and the child will be a demon. So we should kill her before the child is born. But Narada Muni, great sage Narada Muni, intervened and said, no, the child within the womb is not a demon. It's a great devotee. And he said, I will take this woman to my ashram and I will give her protection and let the child be born. And because they're demigods, they're devotees, they had faith in his words. So they circumambulated that devotee and and left. So Narada began to instruct Kayadu, the wife, and simultaneously Prahlad, who was in the womb. And eventually, when Prahlad was born, he was a great devotee. So eventually she was returned to her husband with Prahlad, and so Hiranyakasipu saw, this boy will be my successor. He's going to take over the kingdom, which was practically the whole universe. And so he wanted to prepare him. He wanted him to be properly educated. So he engaged Sanda and Amarka, the two sons of the guru or head priest of the demons, to teach them. And one day, Hiranyakasipu was a very affectionate father. Demons are also, they're in the bodily platform. They love, can be affectionate to their children. So he called him, put him on his lap, and, what is the best thing you've learned in school? Sometimes we also ask, what did you learn in school? What do you like about school? So he, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam. He glorified the nine processes of devotional service. He said that is the best education. And when Hiranyakasipu heard that answer, glorifying Vishnu, who was his sworn enemy and devotional service to Vishnu, he became very angry. And he accused Sanda and Amarka of being enemies in the guise of friends. In other words, he thought they were his friends and they were with him against Vishnu, but they were secretly teaching Prahlad about devotional service to Vishnu, so he wasn't a real friend. He said, just as one's sinful activities may remain hidden, but in due course they are manifested in the form of disease in the body, because disease in the body is sinful reaction. Similarly, an enemy in the guise of a friend can remain hidden for some time, but eventually he becomes exposed. So they said, sir, with all due respect, we have not taught him about Vishnu or devotional service. We are Brahmins, and it is not good for you to insult Brahmins like this. So Hiranyakasipu said, then where did he learn this? How did he become Krishna conscious if he didn't learn it from you? And they said, we don't know how he learned it. He seems to be naturally Krishna conscious. from the beginning. Why don't you ask him? So Hiranyakasipu asked Prahlad. And Prahlad replied, he addressed him as Suryavarja, the greatest of the demons, which was an odd, say, backhanded compliment. But he said that one cannot become Krishna conscious by his own endeavors, nor can he become Krishna conscious by the endeavors of others. Nor can he become Krishna conscious by the combined efforts of himself with others. This is another mystery. It's almost like the boons that Lord Brahma granted. That logically there seems to be no way that Hiranyakasipu could be killed. So similarly, logically it seems that there's no way one could become Krishna conscious. You can't become by your own efforts. You can't become by the efforts of others. You can't become by the combined efforts of yourself and others. So how? Then Prahlad replied with this verse. And I wanted to recite the verse because it's such a nice verse, but I also don't want to interrupt the story. But we'll carry on with the story and then maybe we'll get back to the verse a little more deeply. So he said, Naishamati stavad ulukramangrim. Basically he said that all right, we'll do the verse. Because it's an important verse, very important verse. We'll do the synonyms. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Naisham mati stavaduru kramangrim.
Naisham mati stavaduru kramangrim.
Svrishyanartha pagamo yadartha. Mahiyashan padarajo vishekam. Niskinchananam navranita yavat. Naisham mati stavaduru kramangrim. Sprishatyanartha pagamo yadartha.
Sprishatyanartha pagamo yadartha.
Mahiya Shanta Darajo Bishekam. Niskin Chananam Navranita Yavat. Naisham Matista Vaduru Kramangrim. Svishatyanartha Pagamo Yadartha. Mahiya Shanta Darajo Bishekam. Niskinchananam Navranita Yavat. Naisam Matista Vaduru Kramangrim. Svishatyanartha Pagamo Yadartha. Mahiya Shanta Darajo Bishekam. Niskinchananam Navranita Yavat. Na, not, Esham, of these, Mati, the consciousness, Tabat, that long, Urukrama Angrim, the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is famous for performing uncommon activities. Sprishati does touch anartha of unwanted things. Apagama, the disappearance. Yet, of which artha, the purpose, mahiyasham, of the great souls, the mahatmas, or devotees, padaraja, by the dust of the lotus feet, Abhishekam, consecration, Niskinchananam, of devotees who have nothing to do with this material world. Na, not, Vrinita, may accept, Yavat, as long as, translation, unless they smear upon their bodies the dust of the lotus feet of a Vaishnava, completely freed from material contamination, persons very much inclined towards materialistic life cannot be attached to the lotus feet of the Lord, who is glorified for his uncommon activities. Only by becoming Krishna conscious and taking shelter at the lotus feet of the Lord in this way can one be freed from material contamination. Please repeat. Unless they smear upon their bodies The dust of the lotus feet of a Vaishnava. Completely freed from material contamination. Persons very much inclined toward materialistic life. Cannot be attached to the lotus feet of the Lord. Who is glorified for his uncommon activities. Only by becoming Krishna conscious. And taking shelter at the lotus feet of the Lord. In this way. Can one be freed? From material contamination. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Becoming Krishna conscious brings about anartha apagama, the disappearance of all anarthas, the miserable conditions we have unnecessarily accepted. The material body is the basic principle of these unwanted material conditions. The entire Vedic civilization is meant to relieve one from these unwanted miseries. But persons bound by the laws of nature do not know the destination of life. As described in the previous verse, Ishatantriyam Urudamni Badha. They are conditioned by the three strong modes of material nature. The education that keeps the conditioned soul bound life after life is called materialistic education. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur has explained that materialistic education expands the influence of Maya. Such an education induces the conditioned soul to be increasingly attracted to materialistic life and to stray further and further away from liberation from unwanted miseries. One might ask why highly educated persons do not take to Krishna consciousness. The reason is explained in this verse. Unless one takes shelter of a bona fide, fully Krishna conscious spiritual master, there is no chance of understanding Krishna. The educators, scholars, and big political leaders worshipped by millions of people cannot understand the goal of life and take to Krishna consciousness, for they have not accepted a bona fide spiritual master and the Vedas. Therefore, in the Mundaka Upanishad 3.2.3, it is said, Nayam Atma Pravachadane Nalabhyo Dhamedya Nabahuna Shutena. One cannot become self-realized simply by having an academic education, by presenting lectures in an erudite way, pravachanena labhya, or by being an intelligent scientist who discovers many wonderful things. One cannot understand Krishna unless one is graced by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Only one who has surrendered to a pure devotee of Krishna and taken the dust of his lotus feet can understand Krishna. First, one must understand how to get out of the clutches of Maya. The only means is to become Krishna conscious. And to become Krishna conscious very easily, one must take shelter of a realized soul, a Mahat or Mahatma, whose only interest is to engage in the service of the Supreme Lord. As the Lord says in the Bhagavad Gita 9:13, Mahatmanas tumam partha daivim prakriti mashrita bhajanti ananya manaso gyatva bhutadim avyayam. O son of Pritha, those who are not deluded, the great souls, are under the protection of the divine nature. They are fully engaged in devotional service because they know me as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, original and inexhaustible. Therefore, to end the unwanted miseries of life, one must become a devotee. Yasyasti bhaktir bhagavati akinchana sarvair gunaistatra samasate sura. One who has unflinching devotional faith in Krishna consistently manifests all the good qualities of Krishna and the demigods. Srimad Bhagavatam 5:18-12. Yasya deve para bhaktir yata deve tata guru tasyaite katita yartha prakashante mahatmanaha. Only unto those great souls who have implicit faith in both the Lord and the spiritual master are all the imports of Vedic knowledge automatically revealed. Saitasvatara Upanishad 6:23. Yam evaisha vrinute tena labhyas tasyaiva atma vrinute tanum savam. The Lord is obtained only by one whom he himself chooses. To such a person he manifests his own form. Mundaka Upanishad 3:2-3. These are Vedic injunctions. One must take shelter of a self-realized spiritual master, not a materially educated scholar or politician. One must take shelter of a niskinchana, a person engaged in devotional service and free from material contamination. That is the way to return home, back to Godhead. This is a very important verse. Coming back to Prahlad and his father, Hiranyakashipu. Hiranyakashipu was asking, how did you become Krishna conscious? And Prahlad was saying indirectly that you don't have to worry about becoming Krishna conscious. Because one can become Krishna conscious only if he smears upon his body the dust of the lotus feet of a pure devotee. And you are too proud. You will never bow down to the lotus feet of a pure devotee. So you don't have to worry about becoming Krishna conscious. But for those who want to become Krishna conscious, who want to become free from anarthas, the method is described here is very important for us. In the beginning, we meet devotees and we hear about the philosophy of Krishna consciousness from them or from Srila Prabhupada's books, or both, really. And we begin to engage in the nine processes of devotional service, chanting and hearing about Vishnu, remembering him, serving him in so many ways. And that brings about anartha apagamo, the destruction of anarthas. But as we continue with the process, we may find that although we gave up more gross sinful activities or unwanted activities, there are still subtle ones that may beset us. For example, before we meet devotees, we may smoke or eat meat or whatnot. But gradually, by association, we can give up smoking, we can give up drinking, give up taking intoxicants, give up eating meat. Even give up illicit sex and gambling. And we can move into the temple, associate with the devotees. But still we may find that we have more subtle anarthas. Okay, you know, we're following the four basic rules and regulations and chanting Hare Krishna, but we still have other subtle desires for name and fame or position and power. We want to be recognized for our service and rewarded for our service in subtle or gross ways. And so to make further progress, we also have to work on those more subtle anarthas. And they get even more subtle. But we have to keep purifying ourselves so that we can be qualified to serve the Lord. So how do we get free from these anarthas? So the answer is given here. Mahiyashan padarajo bishekam niskinchananam. That we must bathe ourselves, abhishek. We must bathe ourselves in the dust of the lotus feet yourself a pure devotee. Otherwise, one's inclination towards Krishna cannot be awake. Mati. And we have that experience. I mean, there's so many people who are materialistically inclined. They want to get free from the miseries of material existence. Everyone does. And the way to become free is to become Krishna conscious. But somehow they can't take to Krishna consciousness because they do not surrender to a pure devotee. They don't take guidance from a pure devotee. And so forth. So they remain more or less as they are. So, of course, pure devotee, niskinchananam, means, of course, kinchana means thing. So, akinchana means without anything, or niskinchana means with nothing. A pure devotee who has nothing, no connection with the material world. But Srila Prabhupada translates it correctly as one who is free from material contamination. Because a pure devotee, he can engage so-called material things in the service of the Lord without being affected. And that is the real work of a pure devotee or an acharya following in the line of Prahlad Maharaj. So, pretty much all of us were materially inclined, but by the association of devotees, our inclination has changed. If we look back at the early devotees, where was the chance that they would become Krishna conscious? In the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says, Yesham Twantagatam Papam Jananam Punyakarmanam. That one, Yesham Twantagatam Papam, one who is finished with sinful activities, Jananam Punyakarmanam, and who is engaged in pious activities, he can take to devotional service. So how many of us were free from sinful actions and reactions? How many of us had engaged in pious activities? And how many pious activities? And how pious? So what chance is there? Well, what chance would there have been? We couldn't do it by our own effort, we couldn't do it by the efforts of others, and we couldn't do it by the combined efforts of ourselves and others. So what chance was there? The only way that it happened was by Srila Prabhupada's mercy, by his causeless mercy and our taking shelter of his lotus feet. Otherwise, there is no conceivable explanation. Once Tamal Krishna Goswami in Bombay had a hernia. And so he went to Jaslok Hospital, which was the best hospital in Bombay at the time, which was built by a good friend of ours, a good supporter. But Srila Prabhupada didn't want him to have the operation because he didn't trust the doctors in India. He thought that Tamal Krishna Goswami should go back to America to have the surgery. So when Prabhupada heard, at that time the only motor vehicle we owned was a Jeep. So Prabhupada got in the Jeep and not these like the newer type of enclosed Jeeps, but the old type of Jeep where it's like a canvas roof and you sort of button it closed on the side. It's not really very comfortable. But he got in the Jeep And we drove down to Jaslok Hospital. That was another thing. We probably didn't have a telephone, but if we did, it didn't work. So we Prabhupada got to the hospital, and he was too late. The operation had already been performed. And they were just wheeling Tamal Krishna Goswami out of the operation theater. And he had been under anesthesia, and he was just coming out of the influence of the anesthesia. He saw Srila Prabhupada. And he said, "Srila Prabhupada, I just had a dream. And in the dream, you had come before the previous acharyas, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Srila Gaurakishore Das Babaji, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and you were giving your report to them about your activities on planet Earth. And you said that by and large, the people have no good qualities. They are not pious. They are not cultured. They are not educated in spiritual truths or knowledge. Basically, they have no good qualities. But there is one thing about them, that they have full faith in me, and whatever I tell them, they do. And Tamal Krishna Goswami looked at Srila Prabhupada for his response. And Srila Prabhupada agreed, yes, that is true. So that is our only hope. Our only saving grace. And that principle continues from beginning to end. We will find later, after Nrisimhadeva emerges from the pillar and kills Hiranyakasipu. That's part of the story we'll tell in the evening. But Prahlad prays to Lord Nrisimhadeva that I was fallen into a blind well. A material life, the material world, we've fallen into the material world, which is like a blind well. We've come into this body, which is like falling into a blind well. He says, I was materialistically inclined, following the general populace, but your servant, Narada Muni, kindly saved me. Therefore, my duty is to serve him. How could I give up his service? So here Prahlad was in having direct darshan, sakshat darshan of the Lord. He was seeing him face to face. But he was remembering his spiritual master, by whose grace he had the opportunity to see the Lord face to face. And he was expressing to Nrisimhadeva that his sense of obligation to his spiritual master. And his consideration that how could I give up his service? So that is a universal, eternal principle. And yes, even in the spiritual world, our service will continue. Even in the spiritual world, we are under guidance. We don't serve Radha and Krishna directly, or we don't serve Chaitanya Mahaprabhu directly. We have our gurus in the spiritual world as well. And therefore, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu declared himself Gopi Bhartu Padakamalayor Dasa Dasa Anudasa. I'm not a Brahmin, I'm not a Kshatriya, I'm not a Vaishya, I'm not a Shudra, I'm not a Brahmachari or Grihastha or Vanaprastha or Sannyasi. Again, it's the same thing. And, well, if you're not any of those things, what are you? You have to be one of those. No, I'm not any of those things. But I'm the servant of the servant of the servant of Krishna, the maintainer of the gopi damsels of Raja. So that is our constitutional position. And we are actually engaged or meant to be engaged in that activity now, right here and now. It's not that we serve the devotees now, but then when we go to the spiritual world, we don't have to serve the devotees, we just serve Krishna. Now we serve the devotees in the spiritual world as well. Or, if we have the proper consciousness, we are in the spiritual world right here. It's not that we graduate. Okay, now I've been there, done that, I've graduated, and I don't have to serve the devotees, don't have to serve the group. So we might as well get used to it, whether we like it or not. We don't have much choice. Yes, our god brother Burijan Prabhu, he's a wonderful devotee. He's one of the best there is. He's like a little independent thinker. He does tremendous service to ISKCON and the devotees, but he's like a little independent thinker, and like too much of the regimentation or whatever. Although he's completely surrendered to Srila Prabhupada and ISKCON. But after Tamal Krishna Goswami, because Prabhupada had said that we'll have another ISKCON in the spiritual world. Now this was a very important statement that Srila Prabhupada made in a letter to Tushta Krishna Prabhu. Tushta Krishna Prabhu was one of those devotees who had been with Sai in Hawaii. And then Sai, he became like a guru, and he had a whole following in Hawaii based on Srila Prabhupada's teachings, based on his books. But he never met Srila Prabhupada. So one year, Sai and his followers came to the San Francisco Rath Yatra. And Sai, like, he surrendered to Srila Prabhupada, and he took initiation from him, and he brought all his followers with him. So one of them was Tushta Krishna Prabhu. He's a very nice, very sweet, mellow, nice devotee. And somehow, going door to door in Bombay later, he met Mr. Nair, who had owned the property at Juhu and eventually entered into an agreement to sell it to Srila Prabhupada. But actually, he was a very crooked person, and he took money from Srila Prabhupada, and then on some pretext, he canceled the agreement, and he wanted to keep the money and the land and teach Srila Prabhupada. So in time, this Tushta Krishna Prabhu, I think he went back to Hawaii, and he was of the opinion that Sai, who was later initiated, as I mentioned, and given the name Siddha Swarup, that Siddha Swarup was a pure devotee, and that none of Prabhupada's other followers were pure devotees. And therefore he felt that he could serve Siddha Swarup, but no one else. And that everyone should, as a matter of fact, serve Siddha Swarup. So Srila Prabhupada wrote back that Siddha Swarup is a good soul, but to think that only he is a pure devotee, only he should be followed, is the wrong idea. Because if you have that idea, it will create factions. And you know, he said, you're saying that Siddha Swarup is a pure devotee, Shakta Vesha Avatar. And then Prabhupada said, anyone who's sincerely following the instructions of the spiritual master is a pure devotee. Not only Siddha Swarup. And then he said, Siddha Swarup will go back to Godhead, Shamsundar will go back to Godhead. I think Shamsundar was the GBC then, and you know there's always things with the GBC. It's just the nature of organizations. So he was saying, Siddha Swarup will go, you will go, Shamsundar will go, and we'll have another ISKCON in the spiritual sky. And then he said, only Mr. Nair, he will not go. So, well, that's true. I mean, if we become Krishna conscious through Srila Prabhupada and his disciplic succession, then when we go back to Godhead, we'll be with Srila Prabhupada, but we'll be with Srila Prabhupada with all the other devotees who were attached to Srila Prabhupada and went back to Godhead through following his instructions and his line. So everyone else will be there. I mean, who I follow seriously. So after, this is a joke, of course, after Tamal Krishna Goswami left, Buridan Prabhu commented that when I heard that there's going to be another ISKCON in the spiritual sky, I wasn't so sure how I felt about that. But now that I think of Tamal Krishna Goswami being there, the prospect suddenly seems a little more attractive. So but it happens. Yesterday I was so happy, one of the devotees here approached me on the sidewalk, and he's very keen on Harinam Sankirtan, going out on Harinam Sankirtan and promoting Harinam Sankirtan. And he said that, you know, that he's experiencing some taste. You know, he said it with all humility, sense of gratitude. So that's, it happens. You just keep doing it. You really put your heart into it. That's very important. You put your heart into it, you keep doing it, and it has effect. It has effect. It may take time, but eventually you can feel the results. Another God brother, because sometimes there's this idea that to enter the higher realms of devotional service, you need to get some other sort of guidance that's not easily available in ISKCON. So another God brother, he had developed some that sort of taste or yearning to serve Krishna in a particular way in the spiritual world, in a particular mood. But to my knowledge, he never really went outside of the association of Prabhupada's devotees or Prabhupada's books, really. And so I asked him, you know, how did it happen? And he said, you know, you just keep chanting and following the regulative principles and preaching. And preaching means serving the mission. And he also, he preaches, he travels and speaks. And at a certain point, that all builds up and it reaches a point of critical mass, and then it just like it sort of happens, you know, it just accumulates to a certain point and it happens. And I know this devotee, he's very strong on his disciples reading Prabhupada's books. In fact, I heard from one disciple that he has instructed them that they must read 1 hour of Srila Prabhupada's books every day. They can read other books, but that's beyond the 1 hour of Prabhupada's books. It's that potency is there in the process. But you have to keep at it, you know, you persevere and put your heart into it. I mean, you work hard. And these things happen. And I was thinking of that example, because we're talking about anartha apagama, the disappearance of anarthas. The example that Prabhupada gave, that you get in an airplane and everything's the same. You know, you sit down, you have your bottle of water, if you bought it past the security check, and, you know, your whatever, trail mix, and your magazine or your book, and may have a friend you're traveling with. So you're sitting, you're drinking, you're reading, you're talking, everything's the same. But then it seems like nothing's different. So when you come to Krishna consciousness, it's similar. You know, you have friends, you talk, you work, you sing, you dance, you play music. Everything seems the same. It seems like there's nothing very different. And Prabhupada said, but when you look out the window, you see, oh, you know, we've gone so far, and like, all the houses and people are like so little. And so in the same way, it's very subtle. Everything seems the same. But when you look at what you were before and what you are now, you see there's a big difference. So, expanding on that analogy, yes, even when it's cloudy, you can see you're rising above ground level. Everything down there is becoming smaller, more insignificant. But then there is a certain stage when you pass through the clouds and then you're above the clouds. And then the sun, you see the sun is shining. And so that is just another stage. I mean, it takes time to go through the clouds. You're still making progress. And the same example, when you look back at what you were before, where you were before and where you are now, there's a big difference. You just keep at it, and then you know, gradually like break through the clouds. So it takes time, if persevere, and I'm not claiming I'm any example of it, but it happens. You just keep doing the same thing with, you know, not just quantity, but quality. You know, you chant, but you try to chant with attention. you do everything, but you try to do it in the proper mood. It's not like you have to do, like, you know, lie down on a bed of nails or something, you know, extreme. Or, recently one devotee was telling some stories of devotees who, they were like very extreme. Anyway, I won't go into the detail. But we don't have to do that. We don't have to do that. The main thing is to be in that serving mood. That's the main thing. Just one example, one devotee, he's like becoming more and more renounced in Mayapur. He was eating less and less, and devotees were, oh, he's doing, you know. And Prabhupada was listening, And then they said, and the devotee said, now he doesn't even want to live in the ashram. He wants to live in a tree house. And then finally Prabhupada spoke, oh, wants. He's thinking about what he wants. Yeah, it's just calm. It's just a selfish desire. And so maybe not all, but some of the devotees who did these extreme things didn't last. But we just do the simple things with focus, with attention, with, you know, intensity, and continue in the cooperative spirit to spread the mission. Spreading the mission brings the best, greatest mercy from the Lord, distributing books, spreading the mission. And then, by Prabhupada's mercy, it all follows. Hare Krishna. Yes. Prabhu.
Thank you for your nice class, rich with multifaceted realizations. About 2 nights ago, I received a telephone call from God, at the daughter of a godbrother of ours. She is a disciple of Ramana Maharaj, and she was ringing me because she wanted help. She's coming here to Los Angeles at the end of this month with 11 other ladies and her husband, and they're going to be traveling down here in Los Angeles. So, innocently, I felt innocently she was asking me to help. Well, you know, she's, I don't know what some words that are in the office. She's giving me some instruction as she's supposed to be a reverend husband and leading up the party. And she's asking, where do I go in Los Angeles? And where, she knew I was going to be here. So I was thinking to myself, okay, what do I do? Do I help these people? I mean, this is, you know, I'm just a competition or something like that. You know, I was thinking, you know, I wasn't sure. This is in relation to the point at this time of spiritual world. And I was thinking, well, what do I do? Anyway, I helped her a bit. I recommended some areas that I think could be good for them, but would not interfere with our something that we're not planning on doing for the foreseeable future. And so my question is just that, what is the proper attitude? And it's like, did I have a red? I mean, should I be seeing them? It's like, say somebody's a follower in that camp, you know, Ryan R. Rogers, somebody's a river, and say they changed 16 minutes and they're following the core of their principles, management, some people in those organizations that are doing that. So should I be thinking that, yeah, they're going back together? You know, what's the rightful self-understanding? Are they, because they've given up loyalty to Islam, at least some of them have consciously. The older ones, the ones that are our age, have certainly consciously broken loyalty at this time by becoming, you know, a member of Narayana or our followers with Ripley. And apparently there's some philosophical discrepancy in the consciousness. So are they, you know, the next generation, you know, I'll just get for Ripley. Are they making spiritual progress? Or, you know, are they going back to this time of the spiritual world, or are they off? Or what's the proper understanding?
Well, it's a good question. And I think Ritviks are in a different category and followers of Narayana Maharaj. And then there's so many different types of followers. But, you know, there'll be somewhat different lines in the spiritual world. And again, quote to Mal Krishna Goswami, he said that when he goes to the spiritual world, he wants to be connected with Prabhupada in the spiritual world. And you know, even if, as they were making the propaganda, you know, you can get it easier and faster from someone else. But, you know, Tamal Krishna Goswami said, you know, I don't want to get it easier and faster and end up somewhere else. You know, I want to end up with Srila Prabhupada, even if I have to work harder to reach there. You know, another example, I mean, anecdote really, but another god brother of ours who had spent some time with Narayan Maharaj and then felt he just had a realization that, you know, Prabhupada had created ISKCON for him and he was meant to be an ISKCON. He sort of imagined a scenario where he would go to the gates of Vaikuntha or, you know, the precincts of Vrindavan. And the gatekeeper would ask, "Who are you?" And he would say, you know, he imagined, "Well, I can, you know, I'm so and so. I'm a Shiksha disciple of Narayan Maharaj." And then he imagined the gatekeeper would go and then this devotee was thinking, you know, I don't really know what Narayan Maharaj would say. I don't really know what my standing is with Narayan Maharaj. I'm sort of like taking a chance. Taking a gamble. And then he imagined, you know, the same scenario, and, you know, I'm so and so, a disciple of Bhaktivedanta. So, okay, I'll check. And then he imagined that the gatekeeper would go to Srila Prabhupada and say, his name was Satsvarupa. He'd say, Satsvarupa? My Satsvarupa? Yes. Yes. Call him immediately. Bring him immediately. So, you know, it's a matter of faith, relationship. And it's also a matter of where you want to end up. You know, it's like, yeah, so we want association that will be favorable for our mood of devotion. Like, another god brother, His Holiness.
Asking what he's saying. they are bona fide, but it's not just what we want. That's the feeling I'm hearing. They're bona fide spiritual organizations, bona fide, and they're engaged in devotional service, but it's not what we want. We want to be qualified. We want to practice devotional service. We want to practice devotional service. We've got to be qualified. We like this group. We like this attention. We have perception of the world and attachment to qualified. We want to be with him. Therefore, our parents is on. But they are long. That's kind of the thinking I'm hearing up to this point now, is that correct or correct?
Well, I don't think the focus should be on Narayan Maharaj or this one or that one. Because who are we to assess them? I don't want to be I wouldn't be comfortable having to make an assessment about Narayan Maharaj's spiritual position. The focus of my answer is, what do you want? You know, where is your faith? You know, if you have faith in Narayan Maharaj, then you may find the association of his devotees favorable for your faith. And then that will lead you where that leads you. If your faith is in Srila Prabhupada, then you want to associate with devotees whose association is conducive to that faith. It's like when I was in San Jose, a very nice lady, devotee from Russia, was visiting something, I don't know, her husband has some business, they go back and forth. And in Russia, I guess they have a nice house, and do well financially. And you know how it is. So one of the followers of one of these other Gaudiya Mutt Vaishnavas phoned and said, can, you know, one of our devotees stay at your house? Okay, yeah, sure. So then the next time, can we have a program at your house? Yeah, all right. Yeah, have a, you know, chanting Hare Krishna, same philosophy. And so, like, it increased. You know? And they were not aware that there's, like, really a difference between that organization and ISKCON. Then gradually they found out there's a difference. And that here they were in the San Jose Temple with Vaisheshika Prabhu and the devotees there, visiting on Sunday. So they were saying, like, what should we do? She was saying, I think the husband had a more clear idea, but she was, what should we do? He said, well, you know, it depends on you. It really depends on your faith in Srila Prabhupada. That's the critical question. Because she was saying that the only reason that she would have even, they would have even known about her was because of ISKCON, because of Prabhupada's books and the association of devotees from ISKCON. And she had no complaints about ISKCON, but she just got involved with them simultaneously, and then she found herself caught in a dilemma. And, you know, it's like, and Niranjan Swami told me that he had been in maybe Moscow, somewhere there, on Tamal Krishna Goswami's disappearance day. And some followers of Narayan Maharaj had come saying, we also want to participate. Okay, so they said, we also want to make our offering. So, okay. And so in their offerings, they all said more or less the same thing, that because of Tamal Krishna Goswami, Srila Narayan Maharaj learned English, came in touch with devotees from ISKCON, and eventually became a world preacher. Nothing about Tamal Krishna Goswami's service to Srila Prabhupada when Prabhupada was here, nothing about his service to ISKCON after Prabhupada left. It was as if the only thing that he did of significance was, you know, in their minds, elevate Narayan Maharaj to the status of a world preacher. So I said, you know, if you associate with them, that's the kind of katha that you will get. And if you associate with devotees in ISKCON, you'll get another type of katha. And it really comes down to how important, you know, your faith in Srila Prabhupada is to you, and your relationship with Srila Prabhupada is to you. Because if that's the main consideration, then the association of his followers will be more conducive, you know. But if that's not such a priority, if there are other considerations, that's your choice. But you should know there's going to be a difference in the type of katha that you hear in the two places. So I don't think that, at least I don't feel comfortable cast in the position of having to make a statement about Narayan Maharaj's spiritual position. I think it's more, I mean, any, yeah. I think it's really more a question of the individual. What does the individual want? You know, in that case, the husband, I think he was pretty fixed on Prabhupada, because it was really because of Prabhupada they learned about Krishna or had any idea of any of the things that... But that was his perspective, and her perspective was she liked my answer. She felt it was neutral and balanced. And she felt she'd have to think about it. You want someone to... I know I didn't answer your question directly, but I don't think I'm not going to like issue certificates or rejection notices, or it's not going to do that. But one thing I can say is that it's for us as devotees, it's very damaging to find fault with Vaishnavas and to criticize Vaishnavas. And so it's I think it's good to see things, you know, sort of the way I presented them. It's like spiritual variegatedness. And choice and free will and desire. Yes, Satchitanoi.
Thank you very much for the beautiful explanation. I also have the same hope, the spirit of books there for many times, really, meetings on the fathers. I was presented and like face to face with the point of, can I just do books with you here? He said, okay. And then I thought, what should I ask? And then I thought, well, first of all, I thought, what does Krishna want with his creation from everybody? What does Lord Chaitanya want? Before I gave an answer, that's what I thought, in the actual sense. What does the parampara want? And then immediately I thought, well, what does Prabhupada want? And who am I to say something completely off? So based on that thought, and then I thought, okay, obviously Lord Chaitanya wants this, and he would want it to, and who am I to say no? But just for practical reasons, and this is a practical reason, as you know, we're doing this barefoot, we're doing this finding for many years, certain rules we have to follow, and I would appreciate that you just follow that and respect that. But as far as you receive Christian consciousness, the whole world is there for you to go anywhere you want. And also, I thought that, you know, like I go to the UCLA and other universities, and I have Christians, Jehovah's Witnesses, Mormons, Moonies, and even sometimes some of these followers came to me in the same group that we're talking, our family, but you know, with a different view. So, Prabhu, is it okay for me to be here? I say, don't ask me, I know the authority here. You can do it if you want. That is not me giving permission. I'm saying, thinking about what Lord Chaitanya wants, what Krishna wants, what is my goal, how will that affect my consciousness and their consciousness and the people in general to reach out. So that's it, just like a practical reason, is going wherever you want. I don't know if I can help you with that because I have my duty and commitment to Prabhupada. And I was just going to finish this by saying, Maharaj, that Jesus called a nice word that Prahlad Maharaj said, that I can only gradually in material existence in the blind world of poisonous snakes, and by the mercy for your disciple Narada Muni, I will say, how can I give up my service to the Guru? So I always thought the same thing. Whenever someone comes to talk to me about it, I said, the only one and the person I met was the Prabhupada's books. And thank you, you're fine for whatever you have. As far as hell, because many of them, they ask me, you know, we're everywhere. And they come. And I encourage them to go and do their thing, do their preaching, but at the same time, I still have some difference. And there's no anything, there's no nothing, there's just a practical reason. So, I'm sorry, I apologize if I put something extra there. If I have some misunderstanding, please correct me.
No, I think what you said is proper. I mean, there's Vaishnava etiquette. And within the different, within the different branches of the Gaudiya Mutt, they have a certain etiquette. And the etiquette is that you take initiation from certain guru, then you serve in his mutt. That's just the etiquette. That's where your faith is, and you've taken initiation, then you serve there. So, I think that's very reasonable. It's a huge world. You know, why? You know. Agavit Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. After hearing you, can we come to the conclusion that Krishna consciousness, Hare Krishna, after hearing your wonderful katha, can we come to the conclusion that Krishna consciousness is all about developing intimate, loving relationships with the spiritual master and the devotees, and developing attachment with the lotus feet, and serving them with love?
Yes. It is. But there's also the process of chanting and hearing and remembering Krishna, which is their instruction. So we should chant, you know, if we're initiated, chant 16 rounds of Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. We should read Srila Prabhupada's books. You know, we should follow their instructions, which is to be Krishna conscious. But I mean, if you do that, if you serve the spiritual master and the devotees, that will happen. And that they're also not separate from Krishna. But yeah, there should be a balance, you know, chanting and hearing about Krishna. I mean, that's also our service.
Be aware of the very bondage from the false ego. So if we haven't necessarily reunited with them, then because we can't, we're covered in that, it's inconceivable, then it's probable to think that, you know, here on earth we can definitely have multiple spiritual masters, and also we may also have spiritual masters we're unaware of.
Well, one can have only one initiating spiritual, this is, you know, according to Shastra, one can have only one initiating spiritual master, but one can have more than one instructing spiritual master. But they should be in harmony with each other. Like Srila Prabhupada wrote in one letter, that you have only one spiritual master, just like you have only one father. But anyone who helps you or to understand what your spiritual master has taught, or, you know, anyone who teaches, repeats purely what your spiritual master has taught, he can be accepted as spiritual master. But not that you disobey your real spiritual master and accept someone else as spiritual master. And there's one purport, a commentary, where Srila Jiva Goswami, because there are, like, there's that, the Avanti Brahman, he had so many gurus, like 24 different gurus. But and Jiva Goswami comments that, yes, generally, but there's one spiritual master who's takes ultimate responsibility for the disciple. But certainly, yeah, we need all the help we can get. As far as having a spiritual master that we're not even aware of, I mean, there, we certainly have well-wishers that we're not aware of. And in an indirect sense, you could say that there are spiritual masters because their teachings are coming to us through the cyclic succession, but we're not aware of it, that it's included in what we're getting from Srila Prabhupada or others. But generally, guru and disciple is reciprocal. One is a guru for a disciple, one is a disciple of a guru. But I'm sure we have many well-wishers that we're not aware of. The spiritual world, and even here. I don't know if that answers your point. Otherwise, you know, say your spiritual master says, don't do such and such. No, you can't do such and such. Then you have a Shiksha guru who says, well, you can do it. So then what? And how are you going to decide? Then you'll decide. That means you're your own guru. There's a lot of people like that. I take a little from here, a little from there, and you know, like what? They're their own gurus. So there's truth to what you said, but it has to be qualified. So as like Prabhupada used to say sometimes, everyone's servant is nobody's servant.
Beginning your class, you were quoting an association, Tantikatampa, you know. Yeah, so, and then you sort of made a point that is related to an anecdote, which I want to get verification. It goes something like this, that Papa was on a morning walk, and a devotee, a Buddha devotee was, started to see quoted that verse and said, Papa, it says in the Bhagavad Gita, and quoted it, so it's Sanskrit and English. So he's and he asked, Prabhupada, it doesn't seem like that. How do we come to devotion? So it's here in the Bhagavad Gita, it's saying that one has to perform vice activities in this life and previous lives, and when six simple activities have to be completely eradicated. And the way the story goes, supposedly Prabhupada interrupted and then said, I have created you with fortune, or I have made you with fortune. And I've seen that quoted, as I've heard devotees say that, and I've seen it quoted in the Asapuja homages. But I couldn't find it in the database, so I just wanted to. I was just curious to know, you know, is that an authentic? I mean, do you know the actual source of that? Would you, who's on that morning walk and who asked that question? Did it really happen, in other words, or is it just something that's coming down in the devotee law? And you don't know, really know the original source. I couldn't find it. It wasn't on the database, and I remember hearing it in the same conversation. You're familiar with that, right?
Yeah, I thought of it when I was speaking. I think it's relevant and I think it's true. I mean, I don't remember the context, but there are things that are not recorded. There are things that have been recorded but not transcribed, that are not part of the database. There are things that have been recorded and transcribed, but they haven't been able to place them in terms of time and place. And it's a huge undertaking. And the archives needs help. I mean, if anyone's available to do transcription, the archives can use help. I've heard things on tapes that are not in the database. And I wrote to Ekanath at the archives. He said, yeah, we have the recording, but we don't have it transcribed. And they're very vigilant. You know, after it's transcribed and they have someone else go over it, they want to make sure it's verbatim, exactly what was recorded. They're very painstaking in their efforts, but they do need help. But that, I've created your good fortune. I accept that Prabhupada said it. I don't know if I was there when I heard it. But the other details of the context, but it's certainly true. Bhargava.
And his question was, we need to try to understand what is the ethic devotee's etiquette to when a devotee from another branch is asking a question, asking for some service, some help in the workshop. It has been told that from that branch is but I believe my husband is not having in any way judging the spiritual advancement of that personality. He just questioned because we have been told that that in that branch they speak very in a certain way, certain issues they speak different than Prabhupada. So he didn't know, but at the same time the Vaishnava. So he just wanted to know what is the proper etiquette to do some service, not necessarily associated with them, but to do some service or just to, you know. I'm not sure, maybe my husband can help you reach that out there. The meaning of his question.
You know, if someone asks us, it's sort of the same principle that everyone's servant is nobody's servant. And it's not that we are obliged to help every devotee in the way that they want us to help them. Because there may be different priorities in terms of our service. And that's bona fide. I mean, just sort of common sense advice. Prabhupada said, if someone makes a reasonable request of you, you should not refuse. And another thing he said was that if someone is taking advantage of you, but by their taking advantage of you, you don't lose, or we don't lose, then we don't mind. I think what you did was perfect. And it's good if they have a favorable impression of ISKCON devotees. And who knows in the long run what will happen, but it's always good if people have a favorable impression of ISKCON devotees. You know, Prabhupada's followers. I think what you did was perfect. All right. Very nice discussion. That's really purifying, this talking about Krishna, discussing complex questions. It all just gives us a chance to remember Krishna, talk about Krishna, and learn from others. So we will continue. Hare Krishna, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srila Bhagavan ki jai, Prahlad Maharaj ki jai, Gaur Premanandi. Yeah.